The first thing I want to say is that transferring is not a failure, but it is an appropriate escalation of care.
I did have almost like a visceral fear of going to the hospital.
Around 10 to 15% of home births will transfer to the hospital.
I think I would have had less fear and anxiety if I had actually leaned into what would happen if I have a transfer. How would I have an empowered hospital birth?
Things you cannot control, they can happen. Welcome back to Healthy as a Mother. I am your co-host, Dr. Morgan McDermott, and this is the show for becoming and being a mother, where Dr. Leah and I share our natural women's health and motherhood guidance that you've been looking for through our fresh, functional, and balanced lens. And today we are talking all about transferring during birth if you were planning an out-of-hospital birth, so whether at home or a birth center. We'll talk all about the reasons why transferring can happen, what about risking out before your birth even occurs, but that was plan A, what are the statistics around it, all of the different reasons and the ways to think about this as not a failure, but an appropriate pivot as care has escalated. This is something that brings a lot of women shame, guilt, feelings of disappointment, shock, etc. And I want to really flesh it out, talk about it. How can we prepare ourselves the best for this particular situation, and what kind of outcomes and things we can do afterwards as well? So I hope you're going to learn a lot from this one. Let's go ahead and dive in.
We are back, and we are talking about something that happens sometimes a lot, but is not necessarily something people think will happen, which is transferring to a hospital during birth. So you've gone into labor either at home or in a birth center or some other location, and now the decision has been made for various reasons to transfer to a hospital. And Dr. Morgan is going to break this down for us, and I can also share some of my experience because this has happened to me twice. Well, I guess I don't know if you'd consider the second birth as a transfer because I wasn't really in labor.
No, but it's something that we'll talk about, which is like going past dates. Yeah.
Cool. Awesome. Why don't you take it away?
Okay. So if you're planning an out-of-hospital birth, whether that's at a birth center or at your house, it's the hospital is not your plan A. It always needs to be on some level of plan, B, C, D, wherever it lands. But there is always the possibility, depending on what goes on in the birth or before, that you will end up in a hospital. And so your birth plan will change dramatically because the location and the main providers will become different. So it's one element of those who are planning out of hospital births that like you need to talk about this with your provider, mm-hmm. with your partner, your doula, yourself, and just say, okay, this is a real reality, because in birth, we're going to prepare the best that we can. Mm-hmm. We're going to do everything that we can. And it's sort of like playing the game of life, you know, mm-hmm. we have to intersect with reality. What is like before us? What's happening? Like the reality of the situation is, you know, maybe your water broke and then you didn't go, there was no contractions. Mm-hmm. And there's a certain level of time that your midwife was comfortable for that. And then now they're saying, okay, nothing's happening. We need to go get you some like Pitocin at the hospital. Mm-hmm. Or maybe you go to 42 weeks, like, yeah. Things you cannot control, they can happen. So I want to talk today about sort of the philosophy that I want to lay the groundwork for about transferring in general, because I know a lot of women carry guilt. They feel like they failed. They feel like robbed of an experience, or it's like a total shock to them. They just didn't even realize it could happen. So we're going to talk about why the various many reasons why a transfer might happen, and then some tips for the process itself. So really this is just further education about birth and what you need to know. So the first thing I want to say is that transferring is not a failure. That is something a lot of people will feel. And I very much understand why you would feel that way. Mm-hmm. And I know you can share your experiences too, but it is an appropriate escalation of care. Mm-hmm. Now, sometimes this is going to be because there's like an actual medical thing. And then sometimes there's the wish and the want from the mother. And so we'll talk about those reasons. No matter what happens, it's just that you're going down the sort of like flow chart of if this, then that, mm-hmm. you know, of birth. Like if there's a lack of progression in the birth and she becomes so exhausted and is unable to really participate in the birth anymore and is just like beside herself, then maybe the best option here is to go get an epidural at the hospital so she can sleep. And then we could achieve still a vaginal birth, which would be like, higher priority than just crushing a birth experience in because it's at home. So it's we have to think about it that it's like it's not that you failed. Some of these things are going to be out of our control. Some of them you might feel like you did have control, but at the end of the day, whatever ended up happening, you did the best you could. Nobody is like purposefully, well, I don't know, not nobody, but you're not purposefully sabotaging your birth and then feeling bad about it later. Like if you're purposefully sabotaging the way that it was going to go at home, you're probably not having those feelings of guilt.
Yeah, totally. And the one thing I want to say about that, we mentioned this in a previous episode, but not that, I can remember when that was. It was recently, but that everyone's situation is different. And so you can't compare because, you might have an asynclitic presentation of your baby, for example, like someone I know personally. It came me, where the baby's head is in an unhealthy position or not an optimal position for birth or whatever. And so it's not like you as the woman aren't good at birth or that you aren't strong enough or resilient enough or can hang long enough, like all these other women that got to have the birth that you imagined, because they might not have had a XYZ, fill in the blank, whatever it is that you had. And so that's something that has helped me remind myself that I'm not a bad woman at like birthing, because I felt those feelings that like, wow, I can't do this. Like all these other women can do it and I can't. But it's not like a reflection of you. There's so many situations at play. And so that's something I just want to share as like a little fee.
Yeah, thank you for that. I mean, there is so much feeling that we put on these situations. And some people won't have that. They'll just feel like, well, that was weird or that was just a strange happenstance. But then some will feel like, oh, if I had, they'll analyze, they'll go back in time and they'll reanalyze every step. There's like a little gnat flying around my face here. They'll analyze every step of the early labor. Usually I feel like that's where it comes into play. And they'll say, oh my gosh, I should have just like slept more. What if I had eaten this? What if I had done that? Da 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 da. And I thought it was going to be like this. And then, whatever it is. And what I have to say about that is that it's very natural and normal to do that. And let yourself do that a little bit, like maybe go there once. And then also just, you have to kind of come to terms with the reality, which is that it was out of your control in this situation. You did the best that you could. And what has happened has happened. So, dwelling in the past, while I do think it takes a good amount of processing, and we will get there too in this episode, it's not something that you're gonna glean benefit from by beating yourself up. Do you know what I mean? You can take some lessons in learning and say, wow, I should not have, maybe I'm trying to think of an
Okay,
example.
like for me, I would have chosen a different midwife if I could go back
Yes.
personally. I feel like maybe a different midwife would have been a better fit for me. Would that have changed my outcome? I don't know. But in moving toward my next child, I was more mindful about the questions I asked and like the energy that I knew I would feel more comfortable with. Like the midwife I had in my first birth was more militarized and just like really intense and like, you do this. It doesn't matter what you think and feel, like push against it. Like there was no respect necessarily of like, I don't know, certain things. And that really made me clam up, like I don't do well in that energy, but it's not something I knew I did or didn't do well in, the first time around.
Yeah, well, I think she really derailed a lot of the energy of the birth by that comment she made when she came to check you and you were 3 centimeters. And I'm like, what do you mean? This is great progress. But for some reason, something about the situation made her say out loud to you, which I think was extremely inappropriate, oh, this is probably not going to go. This isn't going to work. Like, you're only 3 centimeters after laboring through the night. And it's like, what are you talking about? I
I
was laboring for
know.
24 hours and I was at 4 centimeters. Like, not very different, and you hadn't even gotten to 24 hours yet. Your contractions had started at 7 p.m. the night prior, and this was like early morning the next day. Like, what on earth? I have no idea. And I tried to ask her, and explain it to me. So either way, that was a very, you don't say things like that. And then everybody was doubtful. And planting the seed of doubt in the middle of a difficult time like that is one of the most unprofessional, rude things that you can do, because it wasn't even founded in anything. But I do think that whatever. I mean, yeah, so you're right. Care providers, choosing a different care provider is one of those things that we could maybe think, all right, well, next time I'm going to do that differently. But in the moment, you didn't know. Who knew? We had no idea. So it's like, again, we can't beat ourselves up, right? Like, we just did the best that we can all the time. We have to, and that's all of mothering. The parallels between birth experiences and mothering, and like, I mean, even, yeah, the fertility journey, all of
I
it,
know.
it's
They're
all
all so similar.
teaching you so much about what it's going to be like. It's sort of prepping you and giving you these little microcosm experiences for what it's going to be like for the length of 18 years of parenting your child, 18 plus years. Because there's so much that's out of our control, and it's really difficult to enter that. Up until you have children, usually in your life, you are a solo entity who has control over what they do. And if I want this, I work harder and I get that. Or if I do but, and obviously, yes, there's external factors that are at play, but we are not in a dance with another sentient human being until we have children. And now everything is different forever. And it confronts us in many different ways, in our perfectionism, in our idea of control, in our it can bring up and trigger deep ideas about like worth and blah 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 that you didn't even know were going to come around. And so this is one of those situations where I think people can be very shocked if they haven't gone there. And again, this is one of my tips later on. But so let's talk about some of the statistics and why transfer happens, first of all. So the statistic around home birth is usually that like around 10 to 15% of home births will transfer to the hospital. The number that lands on from the biggest, largest studies is like 11%. So you can just kind of safely say, ish, one in every 10 women who's planning on having a home birth will probably transfer to the hospital on average. Okay. Of those 10% of women, let's just say, 20 to 35% of them are going to be first time moms, and only 4 to 9% are going to be subsequent moms, experienced moms. So this is really heavily, well, wait a minute. Those numbers don't add up to 100. Why is it worded like that? This is
I
how the
don't know.
statistic was reported.
That's interesting.
I don't know what that means, but I think what they,
Mysterious other percentage of moms
yeah,
that
they're moms that are neither first-time moms nor experienced moms, alien moms. I don't know. I'll have to go back. Oops, I did just prep this, but that is what the statistic said. So, but I think that the point here is that you're 2 to 3 times more likely to transfer as a first-time mom. And there's a lot of different reasons for that. Your uterus and body having not done it before, and the whole process, it's the first time that your cervix has dilated to 10. It's the first time that your uterus has organized contractions into a meaningful pattern. It's the first time that you have had to get your brain out of the way so that your body can take over and do what it needs to do. It's the first time that you've had to deal with this experience. And I think the gift in subsequent children with birth is you're kind of like, okay, the end game, like how the intensity point at the end of what's going to happen. So then all the early phases feel like cake. You're just like, whatever. Whereas when it's the first time, you're like, oh, is this transition? And it's like, no, you're like 2 centimeters. But you have no idea. You can't, there's nothing relative for you to compare it to. And that's all of first time motherhood, honestly. Like every single interaction you have with your baby, is this okay? Why are they breathing like that? Blah, blah, blah. Having more children is so much more calm in a lot of ways. So just know that for anybody who's planning on this and they're like, I can't do this again. Okay, it's not going to be like that again. It will be vastly different because you have experience. And then for some reason, with birth centers, there is a higher percentage of transfer. So it's more in the like 15, 16% range. Although I did find one statistic that said it was 18%. So I'm not sure why that is. It may be
It's
a
probably there's
combination.
more li like they just have more liability fear. Like I feel like midwives, if you choose to be a home birth midwife, that you have more, you are willing to accept more risk maybe than somebody who's not a home birth midwife, because you would be a home birth midwife then, I feel like.
As we're talking about birth and postpartum support, I want to share an underrated tip with you. That tip is to continue taking your prenatal. Pregnancy and postpartum are the most nutritionally demanding phases of a woman's life. Many women stop taking their prenatal after birth, but we recommend taking it for at least the first 9 months postpartum or the entirety of the time that you're breastfeeding. My favorite prenatal is Needed's Prenatal Multi, and it's the most robust formula that I've seen in the market. It contains bioavailable nutrients in their evidence-based dosages, well above the bare minimum that a lot of prenatals settle for. Their quality standards are top tier with transparent third-party testing, and over 10,000 practitioners now recommending the brand. And now we have the results from their IRB-approved clinical study that confirm the results of what we've been seeing clinically. Women who take the Prenatal Multi have significantly higher blood levels of critical nutrients for pregnancy and postpartum. This includes vitamin D, B6, B12, riboflavin, vitamin K2. Only women in the Needed group reach the adequate, sufficient levels of vitamin D. Vitamin D plays a big role in your immune health, your mood, and your energy production, all things that are really important during your postpartum season. And while there's many different ways that you can support yourself postpartum, continuing to take your prenatal is a really simple, easy way to cover all your bases. It's one of the most impactful habits that we can have, and Needed makes it easy. Learn more about the study at thisisneeded.com/thrive and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20% off your first order. Yes, healthy mother, like a little affirmation for yourself.
You're in a
we'll birth. See. And I hear what you're saying with that, but I kind of think it's the people, because it's like they don't want to commit to home birth for some reason. They want to commit to this like middle ground.
So yeah, maybe there's a little bit of both.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Maybe there's a piece in there because they're like
yes,
a little scared.
They
there's like
a little
fear there
now.
Of mm-hmm. something. Who knows? There's a lot of factors. It could also be because like in a lot of birth center situations, there's like a group of midwives. So maybe like, you know, you don't connect as well with your one of them, and then they're the one that's your primary on your birth, and I don't know, like wishes and desires get lost in translation, like who knows. Whereas when you have a home birth, it's like one or maybe two midwives, but they've mm-hmm. been with you through your entire care. Okay, the most common causes of transferring from an out of hospital birth to the hospital are a slow labor, or like, you know, failure to progress, exhaustion on the mom's side, and then mom's wish for pain relief. And they all kind of go together, right? Like you can see how all three of those are sort of probably in the same situation. Like unusual would it be for there to be a maternal wish for home birth transfer if everything was going like quickly and well and stuff, unless there was a medical issue. But mm-hmm. so it's these moms that, and are usually first time moms, who like just, it's maybe it's been 2 or 3 days, you know, or you've been vomiting, like you could not, there was
like
no way.
It wasn't the pain that I would have needed. It was like, I was so depleted because I'd been throwing up and not eating and not sleeping. It's like, if I could have kept going, if that wasn't the case, and that was so not something I thought would happen. Like I had no prep for that. And yeah, it's just,
we couldn't get it to stop. Like we couldn't get any nutrients or water in you. I mean, you probably would have benefited from an IV, but even then it's like, it was the strangest thing. That was, you
and
know.
And my midwife didn't give me one. And I'm like, why didn't you give me one?
Yeah, she should have. That, I think,
I know. It's like you're in such like a la-la land in pregnancy too. It's just like, why?
Well, and I didn't think about it either. I don't know why I didn't think about that. Like why? Yeah, you needed an IV. You were probably getting very dehydrated. Mm-hmm. So anyways, let's talk about, there's sort of two phases here in transferring. There's getting risked out before the labor even happens. And then there's transferring during active, you know, at some point during the birth. So the reasons why you may get risked out of your planned out of hospital birth would include things like going into labor before 37 weeks or after 42 weeks in most states. Some states have a little bit more leeway, or the midwife has a little bit more comfortability, or say, or push and pull with things. But most states have this 5-week block of time where you can have a baby at home or in a birth center between 37 weeks and 42 weeks. So, I mean, if you are like 36 and 5 or 36 and 6, water breaks, you're having contractions, midwife is going to say, I am so sorry, I cannot tend you. Mm-hmm. You have to go to the hospital. Mm-hmm. And it's because of their license. And this is where the free birthers are like, it's so dumb to have to birth with somebody who has limitations based on their license, and we should just do it ourselves and blah, blah, blah. And I mean, I get that. I think that there should be loose licensure like that, but then there should be individual maternal, or like the family's wishes that are taken into place that can supersede the law, where it's like, I get that you think that this is risky, and I'm going to sign documents and paperwork that are going to protect the provider to say, I'm never going to come back and sue you if something bad happens here. I still want you to do this. Or on the flip side, which is much more common, it's pretty rare to go into labor spontaneously before 37 weeks, unless there's like something going on or you have a premature labor pattern. But typically, it's going to be on the other end. It's going to be women getting to 42 weeks and there's no sense of labor. Gosh, I'm so out of breath. I feel like I'm running a marathon talking to you guys. I apologize.
Are you getting your iron up? Make sure you add that
Oh
shameless
my
needed plug.
God.
There's not iron in the needed prenatal. You have to add it separate. We did that on purpose, but if you aren't getting the iron separate, make sure that you do that, especially if you need it and or you're pregnant in the second or third trimester. Just throwing that out
Yes,
there.
I'm glad you're saying that because I do forget it. I have it sitting next to my makeup because I'm like, oh, I'll take it in the morning. But then I convince myself not to take it because I'm like, well, I just drink coffee or I haven't
Do it
eaten
at
enough
night. I
food.
think it's better at bedtime.
Yeah, typically I do. But then recently what I've been doing is taking my prenatal like right before I go to bed. So then I'm like, I can't do that. But anyway, whatever. It's just pregnancy is a thing. But it is much more common for women to gestate on the later side of things. And I'm not going to go into all the details, but basically, when due dates were calculated by an equation long, long, long ago, and they've never changed these guidelines for how we calculate a due date, it is just not the most accurate day of actually when babies come. Actual statistics say that a first-time mom will get about 50%, actually. So the average first-time mom will deliver her baby spontaneously at 40 plus 5, and subsequent moms will deliver at 40 plus 3. So it only moves up a couple of days if it's a subsequent baby. But 40 plus 5 is damn near close to 41, okay? So we really, if we were going to give a couple more weeks, but then the reason is because of the stillbirth risk, which quote-unquote doubles, which really just means it goes from like 1% to 2%, or sometimes from 1.5% to 3%. But it's a very, very small increase of actual risk. It's just that when we talk about it in statistics of doubling, so actually a lot of providers won't even let you go. They'll schedule your induction at 41 weeks, which is like so out of touch with research in most cases. Now, obviously, if you have something going on, you've had gestational diabetes, preeclampsia, like whatever, blah, blah, blah. But in a normal, healthy, non-complicated, nothing's going on pregnancy, allowing the spontaneous labor to begin on its own and getting closer to 42 weeks has massive benefit over an induction like that, simply based on time. But yeah, unfortunately, so it's really hard because, as you know, once you're getting into that like 41st week, you're starting to really stress out. Your entire birth plan is at risk and you feel pressure. You feel like you have to do something to get it started. And these are the exact opposite feelings, like the hormones that they produce of cortisol, adrenaline, the stress are the exact opposite of what we need in order for spontaneous labor to start. But it's very normal and natural to feel those things because the reality is that, yeah, if we keep going and chugging along with this pregnancy, you're not gonna be able to have your home birth. And that sucks so bad. It's such a catch 22 at the end.
I feel like for me, that was a big part of it too, because even though looking back, or even though in the moment, I was like, no, I'm not that stressed. It's the watched pot feeling, it's all of that. But then we were in the height of COVID and just like the scariness of like vaccination and just all of that. And so I did have almost like a visceral fear of going to the hospital, not to just go to the hospital, but it was like, are they going to take away my baby? Are they going to like let my husband in? Am I going to be there alone? Like all these stories of women wearing masks, laboring alone, no partner, no doula. Like that was when I was giving birth to Avia. And that is so scary. And so I cannot even imagine if you, because I think I deal with a pretty intense level of stress. I don't want to or mean to, but like, I'm pretty high functioning. There's a lot that I manage. And so I think my like normal level is already much higher than what is probably good for birth. And then like heightened on top of that, this like intense fear. It's like, of course my labor wasn't happening. It's
It
just,
was
it
a
gets really
co
intense.
yeah, it's really intense. And I so feel for any of the first time moms giving birth during COVID and like having to navigate no in-person lactation groups and all of that stuff. And then yeah, the women that were birthing alone, like no doula, no partner allowed in. Are you kidding? I live with this person.
I
They can't
know.
come in the room because of like COVID risk. It
I
was
know. So intense.
barbaric
It
and
was barbaric.
absolutely out of control. Like
Yeah.
it made no logical sense. These people live together, yo. What do you think is
They
going to
literally have
happen?
sex. Like, what's going on? I
And the
know.
benefit to her to have her labor support people, like, ugh, what? I don't know. I'm
I
so
know.
sorry about all of that. It's
Yeah.
just.
Anyways, derail. But just to say that I know what it's like for the people who are getting there. And so if you are a person who has to or is navigating that those late weeks, as much as you can, reducing the stress of being scared about the transfer. And I know you've mentioned this, but in case you don't, I just want to highlight of I was the person also who's like, I can't even think about having a hospital birth because then I'm going to manifest it, right? I'm going to like bring
Right,
it into my
yes.
space. So I don't even want to read about it. I don't want to look at it. That is not going to be a part of my reality. I am going to only listen to home births, like all of these things. But as many things do, if you're so afraid of something, often that's what comes into your space. Even if you think that you're not focusing on it, there's a fear piece there. And energetically, either whether it's a lesson or it's a frequency thing or whatever, it can come back. And I think I would have had less fear and anxiety if I had actually leaned into what would happen if I have a transfer? How would I have an empowered hospital birth? Like, what would I do? How would I support my nervous system if I have to go to the hospital and really play that out in my mind because I didn't. And so it felt so unknown, and that made it what was so scary.
100%. And I will talk about that later on in the tips too, that we have to go there in our brain. You are not pulling it into your space by thinking about it for a few minutes and planning out how you'll react. It's honestly such a good way for trauma for prevention for birth, because so much of what is left with women at the end is these feelings of like shock and being out of control and just not knowing what was even going on. And so, even if it's not what you want, when it's happening in the moment, you can be like, okay, well, this is shitty, but like, I'm gonna say this and that, and I'm gonna try to like still get this and that because I know that, da, 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 da. And you have to be on your feet and like ready to, it's happening actively before you, and it's also like happening to you, and it's very difficult, and you're managing all these different feelings and things. And so, yeah, if we hadn't ever gone there and it's like your worst nightmare come manifest that you've always pushed away into a dark corner, it's going to feel a lot scarier. So,
It's like having an energetic bug out bag. Bug out bag is
yes.
like just for emergencies. Like if this horrible emergency happens, I have all of this stuff prepared in a bag that you can grab. It's like a bag of tools. And hopefully you don't need it, but you need to know that it's there and you need to prep it and have it there because if you do need it, then everything is a lot less stressful than trying to scramble around and like gather everything. So like for me, I know it's just a tip we'll get to later, but it would be having that emotional, energetic, nervous system, mental bug out bag of this is a bag of tools that I don't want to have to use, but I am prepping and preparing and training. And I'm going to put it over here in the closet. And if I need it, I can reach in and grab it. And I'm used to it. I'm familiar with it. It's a bag of tools or a set of tools that I can dip into if I need to, rather than, oh shit, this is an emergency. I have no idea what to do. Scramble, get the flashlight. Like, what's going on,
Electrolytes are trending, yes, but they have been in need of our human bodies for all of time. And if you're drinking another popular and delicious salty electrolyte, here's why you should be drinking Relight instead. First of all, have you ever considered the salt source of these other brands? Because most of them just use table salt. Yeah, table salt. You don't want that. Redmond's Relight Powders uses their unrefined ancient sea salt that they mine in Utah. This salt source contains 60 plus trace minerals along with calcium, chloride, potassium, and magnesium in two different forms, glycinate and malate. The minerals that they use in the Relight Powders are all in the appropriate proportions and forms, too. The metabolic needs of pregnancy, healing postpartum, and milk making require more minerals than in other times of your life. Pregnancy itself demands huge increases in your blood volume, which takes, more minerals. Relight is the perfect blend to be sipping during your pregnancy or during your labor even, and especially while you're breastfeeding. It tastes amazing, and my favorite flavors oscillate between mixed berry, lemon lime, and the strawberry lemonade. But you can try a sample pack and try all the flavors for yourself and see what you think. Use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 15% on your entire Redmond order. That includes their OG sea salt, other seasonings, bentonite clays, toothpaste, and more. Exactly. You're always gonna thank yourself for being prepared later on if something does happen, even if that's not the plan A. And the reality of birth is that it is a wild thing. And just because you have it in your head that it's going to go a certain way and you've done all the preparation in the world, it's one of the more humbling life experiences that we can have, because You don't have control over it. So, okay, let's keep talking about things that can risk you out prior to your birth even happening. So, like we talked about dates, going too early or too late, quote unquote, having low fluid, so low amniotic fluid at the end. Say you're getting in that like 41st week and they're wanting to do biophysical profiles where they're looking at the baby on an ultrasound and they're looking at like blood flow and things, they're measuring amniotic fluid, which I think it's a good idea to get one of those at some point, maybe more if you have some higher risk complication. What they may find is low fluid. Midwives have a bit more of a nuanced view sometimes on low fluid amounts. And especially if they know your history and they know that, oh, you tend to be a low fluid person or whatever, if this is not your first baby, they may have a little bit more leeway with that, where hospital protocols are going to say after this number or like below this number, we're inducing or something. And so it just kind of that one, there's not like a hard marker where I can say, oh, never let your fluid get to this number. Also, that wouldn't mean anything to you anyways, because you're not going to have like an ultrasound at home to measure it. But it's also something that we can't really control about. It's not because you're not hydrated. Okay. It just happens at some point. You know, it starts to reabsorb. And there is risk to the baby if it gets too low, but it's also normal. It's like kind of a normal end stage thing. That one's a hard. That's hard. Then high blood pressure or preeclampsia at the end of labor, or sorry, at the end of gestation. So at the end of your pregnancy. Those ones make sense. There's real sequelae that can happen from that, you know, and it's like you probably need more monitoring. You may need more meds. We may not be able to wait 3 or 4 days to get this baby out, you know, whatever is going to happen. So, a breech or transverse presentation. So, transverse meaning like they're horizontal, like their head is on the left side of your body and their feet are on the right side. Obviously, not a great way to come out of the vaginal canal. And then, breech in most states is not legal in an out of hospital setting. Sometimes you can find different situations, but it's definitely one at the end that will get a lot of people, and it's a real shock because everything was fine, baby was head down, head down, head down. Oh, now you're 40 weeks, 41 weeks, and we reassess baby, you know, you're having your prenatal appointments weekly at that point, and oh, the baby's breech. It's like, oh crap. Or maybe you baby was breech, you know, at 32 weeks and they just never turned. You tried an ECV, which is an external cephalic version. You tried acupuncture and moxibustion and homeopathy and chiropractic, and you did all the things for weeks and weeks and weeks, and your baby just would not turn no matter what. Dr. Stuart Fishbein is like the guy for this, and he teaches reteach breech seminars all over the country to providers so that they have an understanding and the skill to do vaginal breech. He has, we have a podcast episode with him that we can link. Also, we have a podcast episode called The Wisdom in Waiting. That is about that idea of waiting for labor to happen at the very end. And you also in that one talk about the wisdom in waiting during the infertility journey and like the 2 week wait. And so that one's helpful too for those that are getting closer to the end there waiting to go
Perfect.
into labor. So I just wanted to, I had forgotten to mention that earlier. Okay, another one is that maybe you find out really late in the game that you're having twins. And again, that's something that you can't have because of the legalities. Maybe you had a low placenta that they were tracking and were hoping was going to move, and it just didn't move in time or enough. I mean, it just didn't move enough. And now they're thinking this is not safe to attempt a vaginal birth at home or in a birth center. We need to be probably in the OR ready to do a cesarean. Maybe sometimes OBs will allow you to attempt a vaginal birth with a low placenta, depends on how low it is. But then if there's any signs of like, oh, we're starting to hemorrhage or something, then they're going to get the baby out real quick via cesarean. Things like gestational diabetes in some cases not. Most of the time, yes, but again, that one's nuanced based on your state, based on your midwife. Intrauterine growth restriction. So this is something that also is usually found out a little bit too late. The reason why that one is risking you out is because you are going to go to be induced, usually like 36, 37 weeks, so early, and you'll need to be induced, and so that's going to be in a hospital setting because the baby's not growing anymore. Or too slowly, and the safest place for them is to be outside and starting to grow on the outside and nursing and things. Because something's going on with the placenta, the cord, whatever it is. Okay, another one is infection. So, like, for some reason, you just developed an intrauterine infection, or something like you have an active herpes, a vaginal herpes infection at the end of your pregnancy. They're not going to allow a hospital or sorry, a vaginal birth in that situation. We're going to do a cesarean. That's because we don't want to infect the baby with herpes, which makes total sense. And since herpes is kind of a come and go infection, it could just like come up at the very end. It's like you've been latent and then all of a sudden it just comes up at the very end and you're like, oh, like, you know, but
So
you have to
hard, I
transfer because
know.
we can't do that. So those are some of the reasons that might happen before your birth is even happening. And so now to talk about the transferring during birth, do you have any questions or comments there before we do this?
No, that was great. This is another educational school day of, I learned so much too. Great.
Welcome to class, everybody. Sit down.
I know. I like really want to know. I'm like, are people into this? I know one of my patients, I think she found me through the podcast, and she's just like, I want to learn every single thing that I possibly can. She's like, I binge your podcast. I want to be like a doctor without being a doctor. And it was just so cute because I guess some people really do love learning all of this stuff. I find it fascinating.
Yeah. I mean, I only ever really hear positive things too. I feel like if it's too much information, those types of people just won't listen to it. You know, like they'll just kind of move on. But those that are thirsty to know it all are going to be like, thank you for going into this. Because I'm not aware of another podcast that is similar where they go into like such detail. I'm sure that it is. I'm not saying that we're the only ones, but I'm just not like aware of.
Probably because they actually do it in courses and we just give it all away.
True.
Like, we're not aware of any other marketing platform of a podcast that just gives out all the information for free. It's us. We are it.
It's so true. Buy our courses, you guys.
Yeah, seriously. That's how we support us.
So okay, so let's talk about the reasons to transfer during birth. So there's sort of like two different main chunks of reasons that we can look at. There's maternal reasons and then there's fetal reasons. So on the maternal side, let's say that like your water breaks, you know, you're 40 weeks, 5 days or something like that. You're walking around, you're not really having contractions and boom, your water breaks or you're earlier, who cares, whatever phase you're at. And you're like, oh, okay, labor's going to start here soon. And then sometimes it just doesn't. And this is actually one of those birth nuances that I wish I knew more about. But every time I ask a provider, it seems like the answer is the same thing, which is like, we don't really know why that happens. And sometimes we can get contractions going and they'll try all kinds of different stuff. But at the end of the day, like, it's just a crappy thing that happens sometimes. Mm-hmm. And now the risk, the reason why there's an issue here is that you're up against the idea of infection. That amniotic bag is protecting baby. It's protecting your intrauterine environment. You know, the mucus plug of the cervix is too. And sometimes you don't have to be very dilated for your water to break. You can be like half a centimeter or almost completely closed, but the membrane pops and fluid is, you know, it's clearly fluid. If you're not sure, you can go to the hospital and get something called a Fern test, where they'll look at the amniotic fluid under a microscope. An amniotic fluid, when it dries, like a drop of it on a microscope, it looks like a fern, the way that like the little crystals kind of go out, whereas just cervical mucus or urine or something like that won't do that. And so sometimes that's how they can tell if they're not sure. I had to do this actually with my first birth because I thought my water was leaking and it wasn't. I was just starting to have like some very thin cervical mucus because my cervix was opening. I went into labor that night. Anyway, so that is just a shitty situation because what can you do? Like all you can do is try to get contractions going. Maybe if you're working with a midwife, you do some quick castor oil or something like that, or you try to, you know, it's tricky because they're not going to want you to introduce. Some of them are going to say maybe sex is fine. Some of them are going to say, ugh, the bag is broken now. We really want to prevent infection. We don't want to do cervical checks. We don't want to have anything going up the vagina anymore. So that's a bummer. That one, sometimes you just have to go and you have to get induced because we're up a time, you know, say it's been 2 days, 48 hours, and you're like, your chances of infection are just going up and up and up and up. Okay.
Right.
As we had talked about, another maternal reason would be like an exhaustion or a stalled labor. Like it's just not progressing. You're having contractions, but you're not having cervical change. So maybe the baby's in a wrong position, asynclitic. OP, so occiput posterior, maybe they're very large, maybe, you know, there are lots of different reasons. I feel like fetal positioning is a huge one here. And this was one where maybe people will look back and say, oh, if only I had done blah, 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 if only I had known. And yeah, I can understand why you would think that because I have that with some of my own births where I'm like, why did I not, or your birth even, like, why did I not... Why did that not dawn on me to do more?
But I feel like this? We did so much.
We did. We tried really hard and she just wasn't moving. But it's like now that I know Gilligan's guide, which we'll put that episode in the show notes too, my interview with Anne Gilligan and her guide for optimal fetal positioning, which is going to one day be something everyone knows. It'll be as ubiquitous as like spinning babies, but it's a much more precise sort of set of movements to do all of the things that we need with fetal rotation to get them maybe off of the back, off of whatever, off of the hip if they are asynclitic, et cetera. So that one is really, really, really common, especially in modern moms. And she explains why, and it's such a fascinating interview. So definitely listen to that before you give birth. The request for pain relief is another maternal reason. So she's just like, I cannot keep doing this. So at the end of my first birth with Gage, I think I was extremely close to that point. I know for a fact, I know it in my bones. If I had been in a hospital, I would have gone for cesarean. There's no way they would have allowed me to keep having this weird, slow contraction pattern. I had to push for 3.5 hours. Like he just was a brick in there. He was not moving. He was OP. And so he was posterior and he was just gave me no rotation. And he came out with torticollis and a lip and tongue tie and tight midline features. And I honestly don't think that he could rotate. He was just the way he, his little beautiful self. But I was like at the end of
I mean,
myself, you know?
it is crazy that you were able to still do it because so many people like me are pushed into those interventions where we don't know, like, if left to your own devices, will the baby come out or will you die? You know, and everyone's like, you're gonna die. But it's like, you don't know that. Like, how do you know that? You're not an intuitive, like,
I
crystal
know. I
ball.
wish we had a crystal
How do
ball
you
so
know that?
badly.
But
I
you
know.
did it. And like, think of if you had a C-section, how likely you would have been to have more. And you've now had four vaginal births. And you probably wouldn't have been able to have maybe any of them, depending on like how your next one goes. You know, if
I know. I know.
maybe you
This
would have had
is.
a VBAC, but it's just crazy that, yeah,
It's,
but
I
it's
think
your
it got
provider.
very, very close. Like, I think we got, my midwife was never talking to me about it, but I think that the energy in the room towards the very end, right before I started pushing, was kind of like, is this even happening? Like, what is going on? I was at 9 centimeters for like 5 hours. Like, I was just, there was a lot of strange things that were going on. And I think I was exhausted. Plus, he was in a weird position. Plus, he was large. Plus, first time. And yeah, I do. I'm so grateful that she just kept allowing me to keep going.
And that you
But
did. I mean, that's such a testament to your tenacity and you're just like, you
well,
know, I don't
thanks.
know
I
if I
mean,
could
I
have. I
was
probably would have been like, lay me down, give me an epidural. Lay me
well,
down, coach, I'm tired.
I literally looked at her and I was like, I either need to sleep or the baby has to come out right now. But I can't just I'm too tired. I'm too tired to like keep going with this. Like I just it had been 36 hours. I was like, anyway, so I don't know. I don't know how that happened. It's Sarah Duhon. Sarah Duhon came in and saved the day because she made me I think I just needed that bump of like something is changing. There is progression because it being stalled out and being so exhausted, I was just like, what's going on? So then she came and made me do a bunch of squats. He moved down like 2 inches and then I was able to start pushing. And so, anyways, okay, so that's another one. You've probably heard that there's some controversy around using pacifiers, that they can interfere with your breastfeeding journey and relationship. They can cause nipple confusion. They can disrupt the way that your baby's teeth come in, yada, yada, all sorts of different things. And yes, some of that is true, but not all pacifiers are created equal. And there is one particular pacifier that I love and I do recommend, and that's because it is breast-like. It's made out of a super soft, pliable silicone that actually can help your baby's latch. This is the Ninny Co. pacifier. So they can be used as soothers, which is important for your baby, but they can also be used as tools for improving oral development and function. Say, like in a situation where your baby had a lip or tongue tie, they need help with their latch for some kind of a reason, they're recovering from a revision. And that has been the case for my last several babies. I use the Ninny as a tool to help strengthen their mouth and actually improves my breastfeeding relationship with them while also helping to soothe them because suckling for a human baby is a need, it's not just a want. So there is a way that you can use a pacifier when you know that they're full and they're satisfied, they're not looking for feeding or anything like that. So you do have to have some awareness and knowledge around what your baby's cues are. But say you're driving or they're trying to sleep or they're in a carrier or a stroller or something like that. Using a pacifier is not a bad thing inherently. It just depends on the one that you use. All of the IBCLCs, so the International Board Certified Lactation Consultants, the occupational therapists, physical therapists, feeding and speech therapists that I know recommend the Ninny, and so do I. Ninny pacifiers are made in the United States. They are BPA and phthalate free, and they don't negatively affect your breastfeeding relationship. If anything, they can help their latch. Use the code HEALTHYMOTHER with the link in the show notes to save 10% and get your baby a Ninny today. complications. So obviously these are the ones that people think of, but they are not the more common ones. The most common reasons are like, I'm tired, I want an epidural. Like I can't keep going, or like the contractions are not producing change. So it's just, what's going on here? I don't know what's going on. Maybe I need to relax with an epidural. Sometimes we do. We hold ourselves very tight, and in getting an epidural, we can relax and our pelvic floor can relax and we can finally start to dilate. Like that's a real thing. I don't think that people understand that. It's a real thing. It's not just so that you can sleep. It's also so that some women are just holding and they don't realize it. And if they can just sleep somehow and relax, they will open up and everything will be okay. And that's another one where people will really put a lot of shame on themselves about it afterwards. They're like, well, why couldn't I just relax? It's like, you know what? I don't know. We don't know. In that moment, you couldn't, okay? And you tried really hard. Like, did you not? Did you not? Like, you gave it your 100% all. And they're gonna be like, yeah, I did. And you're like, okay. Then it's like you're coaching a kid, you know, who loses a soccer game or something. And you're like, you did your best. Like, what do you want me to do? Like, you really tried, and for some reason it wasn't happening. And yeah, it's a tricky thing. It's like, I think about, there are people who are anti-tongue tie releases. They think it's all to do with just like body work and you can like unwind generational trauma and then like the tongue tie goes away. And I just want to be like, okay, but when you're bleeding by 48 hours of nursing your baby, what do you want me to do? Like, I will try all the things, but if I'm going to give this baby breast milk, which I do think is the more important thing than maybe them having like a premature cut in their tissue, I don't know what to, you know, I would love to ask these people these types of questions. I tried my best. Like, I don't know what you wanted me to do. I had to make this choice in order to keep going. And this is how birth is too. Okay, so then you know, there's complications like bleeding, so maybe like placental abruption, or we don't know why the bleeding's happening, but it's scary and we don't want to see it, and so we transfer. Maybe you have a sudden in blood pressure spike or sudden signs of preeclampsia or any signs of infection. So midwives can administer antibiotics at home and in birth centers, but that's usually in the context of GBS. They're like, oh, you were GBS positive, so here's your routine antibiotics that we're giving. But if you start to develop like clear signs in labor that there's a fever and babies not have their heart tones are starting to be funky with the contractions, and blah 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 blah, they're not going to try to be like, oh, well, I have antibiotics. No, you're going to the hospital because your baby's likely to go to the NICU afterwards. This is a big deal, okay? And you, I mean, this is where babies, it's a very fragile time for them. So you want to be in a place where they can get a lot of medical care. And that's not going to be at home, and that's not going to be at a birth center. So this is where we escalate appropriately to the things that we need, right? Like, we don't just go to the hospital because our ankle hurts, but we go to the hospital when our ankle is broken. Like, we use the things we need when we need them. Okay. The fetal reasons would be, like I just said, so concerning heart tones. So if they're listening with the Doppler during your contractions, the baby's heart rate is going kind of down, 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 down as they're listening to the contraction, and then it starts to come back up. There's a certain level of this that is normal. There's nuance here. They are the professionals. They will know when this is like okay and when it's not. And then if there's meconium concerns, sometimes they will also, it's usually not just the presence of meconium. So say your water breaks and it's clear that there's meconium there. It's not just the presence where they're gonna go, oh shit, get in the ambulance, transfer. Like that's not gonna be how it is in most cases. It'll be one piece of a constellation of symptoms where they're going, okay, I don't love this. I think the baby is having a hard time, and there's meconium, and blah 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 blah. I think that like we need to probably be in the hospital for this birth. Okay, so most of these are still going to be calm transfers. You're driving in your own car. Well, you're not driving. Your partner's driving you, and they're in a different car or your car, and you're not like taking an ambulance ride. It's not a super super scary thing. There are some, like the bleeding or really fast progression of baby not doing well or really fast progression of infection, where they might call an ambulance. And also, it depends on your distance to the hospital, too. So, some tips for transferring. Just know, like I'm saying, that most of the time it's going to be a calm situation. But also, like you said earlier in this podcast, I think the number one thing that we can do is get our mindset right about this. Plan A is home birth or birth center birth. Okay. Plan A.5 is like maybe having to do natural induction methods to get the baby to get into labor at home or wherever we are. plan B is blah, 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 blah. You know, you need to kind of go through it and talk in your mind about like, well, what am I, how am I going to feel? Sorry, I'm like burping continuously. How am I going to feel?
I love when your real life pregnancy symptoms just like are in the podcast. I hope everyone really enjoys that. It's like, this
I'm
is real
so
life.
Congested too. Like I just can keep blowing my nose and I'm not sick. It's just like pregnancy
allergies?
Congestion. Pregnancy.
Or just
oh,
allergies?
No, it's just, it's like pregnancy congestion. And this
Oh.
is probably the worst time that I've had it, but I've had it this entire time where I'm just like, I have copious amounts of snot. And then I just feel like everything inside my nose is swollen. So I've been using those like intake nasal things every night. And man, they really work. But
Oh,
anyway, yeah.
good.
And the burping, sometimes I was telling Wes last night, I'm like, I'm starting to get a little bit of heartburn.
Oh,
Sucks. Just a
no.
tiny bit. But yeah,
Oh,
I know. I'm
I
like,
remember it well.
oh, it's,
A
yeah.
good
It's like I
time.
ate something and then I went and laid down and I was like, nope. Okay. I'm not laying down, you know? Okay. But anyway, back to mindset. So in the moment when this is happening, ideally you say, oh, this is that thing that I didn't want to happen, but here we are. And you're going to process and grieve later. Because in the moment right now, you have to like buck up and say, okay, quick frame shift. We're pivoting. This is not what I wanted, but what can I do now? Okay. Because you can still accept or decline certain interventions at the hospital. You can still ask for more time depending on what's going on. You can, you know, give them your birth plan. You can still have some of those elements. Again, depending on the nuance of the situation, it's not like it all comes crumbling down. I mean, unless it's an emergency transfer, and then now we're literally saving your life and your baby's life, and you're just going to be at the whim of whatever they need to do that. And I think probably most people are going to be very grateful that they're doing that and that everybody's going to be okay. Most of the time, it's not that though. Most of the time, it's gosh, this is bummer. Okay, we're slowly transferring. Sometimes the midwife can come with you, and sometimes they can't. So this is a situation where, in your conversations with your team, and in your own head, when you're going through, well, what am I going to do? How am I going to react if I have to transfer? You've gone there in your mind for all different variety of birth settings. Ask your team, can you guys transfer with me to the hospital? Because some of them have rights, some of them don't. Some of them can act as doulas, some of them won't be able to, or can't, or don't want to, or whatever. So I think that that's one thing where women get really like, oh my God, I thought my midwife was going to be like the midwife in the hospital. It's like, no, usually not. Sometimes, but sometimes their role will just switch to like doula. Okay, so you have to kind of, like you said in your C-section with Avi, how you were like, you process it all very quickly and you were like, okay, like, well, this isn't what I wanted. And I'm gonna be there for her mentally, energetically, spiritually in this setting, which is happening to me now. And you know, I think if we can, I'm not trying to gaslight you for your feelings of disappointment, but they do need to be processed later. It's just not the time right now. You are in the middle of giving birth to your baby, and you need to say, okay, I'm a big girl, pull up my pants. What can I do now in this situation? And don't just crumble and give up and like let them steamroll you, because unless, again, it's an emergency like life or death.
I find if I can imagine an analogy for this,
You love
it's
analogies.
you know it. Think of it as a ladder, and you know you're climbing the ladder to get to your baby, and you don't know how many rungs there are, and you don't know which rungs you have to climb to get there. And sometimes you have to climb farther, you know, than other people, or you have to climb in a way that you didn't want or mean to. But just like you said, where there can absolutely be disappointment of, wow, I really thought I'd have my baby after three rungs, you know, and it looks like I have this like other 15 rungs to go or whatever. You know, I remember for me emotionally, the transfer was actually more emotionally challenging than even the C-section because of all the fear that I had around the hospital and like the COVID situation. And I remember having actual feelings of panic going into the hospital and just being like, oh my God, what are you going to do to me? Like, what are you going to take my baby away? Like, is my husband going to be there? You know, all of these things. It was so, so scary. But you just have to be like, you know what? This is my only choice. And I just have to kind of put that in a box right now, like you said, and process it later. And you just have to be brave, right? Like it's bravery is fear, but doing it anyways. And there can still be that fear that's totally real, or that disappointment, or that grief. But then you just say, but in this time, just like anybody in an emergency has to do, you sort of have to like put your emotions to the side, deal with the situation in front of you, and then circle back and be like, let's process this now, because you are still stepping up that ladder to get to your baby, there are still things that need to be done. There are still ways that you can do it in an empowered way, like you said. And so, you know, you just have to kind of put that in a little compartment and come back to it later, because you have to keep climbing. You can't just be walking up the ladder and all of a sudden you're just like, oh my God, and you just fall down the rungs. It's like, you can't, you have to keep going. And yes, you thought it would be here in three rungs or like not spiky rungs or any of the things. It's like you just have to keep going and doing the best you can at every point. And that's all you can do. And I think for me, any advice coming back is prepare, like you said, so that you can, in your mind, do the best you can at every pivot that comes at you. Because that's where I personally think you'll find peace at the end of the day. It's not what happened to you and it's not the outcome. It is how you felt in every moment of those pivots. You know what I mean?
100%. 100%.
Empowerment. That's what empowerment is.
Yes. Because if you feel like you were still an active player or involved, or at least, you know, a consenting, informed consent situation to whatever it was going on, you're going to walk away feeling a lot less disappointed, I think, by the whole thing. Yeah. And I'm glad that you mentioned that about like the panic before getting to the hospital, because that's really common. So some of the things you can do, practical tips, your midwife says to you, we're going to the hospital. Okay. Sorry, this isn't happening, whatever, blah, blah, blah. You say, okay, you have 5 minutes of sadness around it. And then you say, all right, okay. And in the car ride, some of the things that you can do that are really helpful would be to block out the sensory experience that's happening. Whether or not you think you're going to be affected by this, you will. So just take my word for it. You will. If you can wear like an eye mask, if you can listen to Bluetooth headphones, this is where Bluetooth headphones have a purpose. I know that they'll give everybody brain cancer one day, but right now we don't care about that.
Not the time.
Yeah, because it's not the time. Because you don't want cords. You want to just be able to get as quickly into your labor land headspace as possible. And the flashing lights of traffic and what's happening and where you're going and then seeing parking and seeing everything is a very heady cognitive thing and is only just going to continue to remind you that this is not what you wanted. And so you can use this time in the car. You're still going to be having contractions. You're still in labor. Like, you're still having to deal with all of this, that you can be as like present to that whole situation as possible to continue to keep it in this good cascade of hormones. Mm-hmm. We need to protect that as much as possible. We need to protect your headspace as much as possible. So say you arrive to the hospital and it's like, yeah, in order to like walk up to your room, unless you're getting wheeled in a wheelchair, which then you can keep your eye mask and your headphones in. But if you're going to be walking on, yeah, you're going to need to take your eye mask for a minute. And you're just going to say to yourself, I am like going to just get through this until I get into the room. And then I'm diving deep headfirst back into my labor land, like juicy soup that I've been working on for hours now and I've been living in, and I'm going to let my hormones click back into place. And this is not going to be a stop. This is not a stop sign. This is like a yield. I'm merging. I'm merging back onto my.
And if you have a choice, like you said, if someone's like, do you want a wheelchair? Yes, take it so that you can keep your eye mask on and you can like do those things, because I think a lot of people are like, no, I can walk, you know, but it's like, it's not that we don't think you can walk. It's that then you can stay in that labor land like you're talking about.
Like the only time I'd say that wouldn't be a good idea is if your contractions are so intense that sitting position is like excruciating, then maybe you need to walk. Okay. It's like, but you're going to do whatever is going to feel best for you, but really protect your car transfer into hospital transition, because yes, it's not fun. It's derailing. Find a corner, let your partner and everybody check you in, because they're not expecting you, right? Like, you were not a patient. It's not like you've had all the registration done. So it's going to be a little bit of time. If you're super far into your early labor, or is this before birth has happened, this isn't as important to you. But if you're in active labor, this is very important. Or even in like good, strong early labor. Okay. We have the hospital crash course. You're going to have to listen to our hospital 101 birth or podcast episode, hospital birth podcast episode, there we go, keywords, and listen to that. And again, this is just in your preparation. Hopefully you aren't going to go to the hospital, but if you do, here's some things to think about, because you're going to have to start to wrap your mind around that. I do think it's a really good idea for everybody who's planning a home or birth center birth to have multiple copies of their birth plan printed out for this exact situation, and just a side bag that has some loosely packed items of things that you would want, or a list inside of the bag that says toothbrush, phone charger, extra warm socks that your partner can quickly throw together while you're like walking into the car. Okay.
Yeah.
So it's not going to be as beautiful as like a fully packed hospital bag, because usually people are not going to have so many extras of things because you're going to be using them in your home space. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're going to the birth center, obviously like you've got stuff you've already hauled into the birth center, so it's a little bit easier. But even if you have a planned home birth, still have your little like bug out bag, like you said, like in case something changes. I don't want to be completely supply-less, tool-less. Like, print many copies of this birth plan that you can give to the nurses. And if the shift changes, you can give it to the new nurses and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then the thing I'll say is that for afterwards, like we've mentioned now, after the birth has gone on, make some specific dedicated time to debrief what's happened with your midwife, with the team in general, sort of the timeline, asking any questions, whatever was confusing. You know, there's a wish and a want to understand, like, was this necessary? Sometimes it'll be glaringly obviously yes. And then there's going to be a lot of people who are in that gray that they're like, I don't really know. Like, I don't know if this was necessary. And I kind of wish this didn't happen. I wish that we didn't do this, or I think everything would have been fine. Or, you know, there's also the situation where someone's pushing for hours and it's like, baby's just not coming. So they transfer to the hospital. They're there for 20 minutes and the baby comes out. It's like there wasn't actually even anything that the hospital did.
Yeah.
And so in those situations, they're like, oh God. But again, you guys, though, in that moment, it felt like you needed to. It felt like you needed to do what you needed to do. And so maybe you write the story down, or you just talk about it at length and you sort of process and figure out in your mind what it was that happened. And then you will sort of be in charge of you with the way that you make meaning of it or not, the way you process it or not. And if you put any excess, like, you know, sort of negative wording or energy around it for yourself is up to you. So, I mean, it is our responsibility for the way that we are going to process these things. You can feel really angry if it's, you know, especially if you end up concluding, no, my midwife was like lazy and tired, and this did not need to happen, and this was such an annoyance. Like, that happens sometimes too. And it's like, okay, then at the end of the day, like, that just really sucks. And like, you did you did the best that you could, and you felt like you couldn't stand up to her. You feel like you couldn't say no. You felt like she was manipulating you, or whatever was going on. You know, there's different things. That is one of the sequelae that can happen too. So anyway, there's kind of my like, again.
Yeah, and I'll just add two last things. I know you have to go soon, but if for anyone as like an actual tool, homeopathy is really helpful. If you feel frightened, like I should have done this in mine, where I literally felt frightened of the hospital. I should have taken aconitum, which is like fright, like you literally frightful. It can just help process and move through that. And then if you're feeling a lot of shock and grief, like, oh my God, this just came out of nowhere. I didn't expect this. I'm having a lot of grief that came from shock. Ignatia is one of the best homeopathics for that. So those might be little homeopathics that you could have at home just in case this does happen. They would be really, really great tools.
Yep, I agree with that. I think that there's a lot of things that we can do. And also know that it's going to come in waves later. Like, the way you think about it in 6 months is going to be really different from the way you're thinking about it right now. And that'll still differ from the way that you think about it in a year or 2 years. And so, you know, I mean, there's things people can have, just so you know, too, people can have birth trauma and unideal experiences, even if their place of birth remains what the plan A was.
Yeah.
Like, we're not immune just because you got to stay at home. Like,
and you might have less trauma. You might have less trauma because you did this. So these are the kind of things that you have to find the golden nuggets of whatever it is, whether it's a soul lesson or it's a save your baby's life or a deep soul like experience or whatever. Like, you might have saved yourself a lot of trauma by doing this. So it's not always that transferring is a bad thing.
100%. All right. Well, thank you guys. Hope you enjoyed. Hope it's not something that comes into your sphere of necessity, but also maybe you're listening to this and you know a friend who's had this experience happen and you can be more helpful to them or understanding or empathetic or whatever it is, or you can even send it to them, because 1 in 10, I mean, it's going to happen a lot if you've got a lot of people and friends in your life that are planning out of hospital births. There's a lot of feelings around it. So, okay. Anyways, Till next week.
Bye.
Bye. Are you pregnant or you're trying to conceive and you're looking for reliable natural health information about how to have a healthy pregnancy and also prepare for the future steps in motherhood to come, like the birth, the breastfeeding, and the postpartum? Because I have got you. So this is exactly the reason why I made the 6-week pregnancy call. And it's my most comprehensive resource. It's the thing that I absolutely love. I've poured my heart and soul into it. It's all of the things that I wish that every woman knew when they are entering motherhood. It's a pregnancy health course, birth prep series, breastfeeding 101 class, and a postpartum planning course all in one. And normally I run it as a class with live Q&A calls, but now it's available in a content-only format so that you can purchase it at any time and start learning immediately. It's called the lessons-only format, and it is just only all of the video lessons that you'll get access to for forever. So log on to milkmedicine.com/lessons-only or check out the link in the show notes.
In order for others to hear this information, please leave a review with Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and share with a friend who would benefit from this content. Please remember that the views and ideas from this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended to be a substitute for medical care of any kind, including the diagnosis and treatment of any disease. Consult with your provider before integrating any of this information into your own healthcare plan. A healthier future starts now, and it starts with you.